Welcome back to Money Life, where it's time for the other interview on our show. And that's kind of a good way to describe it, because Brad Lammensdorf has been on our show doing pretty much everything. That's because he's the strategist behind the Lammensdorf Market Timing Report. And so in that role, he could come on and talk technical analysis with us. He's the chief executive officer at Active Alts, which is a money management business running a long-short strategy and a focused momentum strategy using actively managed liquid alternatives. So there he could really be in the big interview. And of course, he also is the manager of the Ranger Equity Bear ETF, ticker HDGE. And he comes on the market call and talks about picking securities. If you want to know more about what he's doing, LMTR.com for the Lammensdorf Market Timing Report, ActiveAlts.com or AdvisorShares.com/fund/HDGE. It's all linked up at the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page. Brad Lammensdorf, it's great to have you back on Money Life.
Always glad to be here.
So we've got a market where the fundamentals are arguing with the technicals, the fundamentals being very cautious, the technicals being a lot of green lights. But you put out a warning on Tuesday that basically was suggesting that while everybody's looking at the fundamentals and the technicals when it comes to the stock market, they're missing the big signal out of the bond market. So, two questions to start things off. Who wins the argument, the fundamentals or the technicals, and the bond market? Explain the comment.
Sure. So, I think that the technicals have improved as far as the breadth and stuff is concerned. Unfortunately, I feel like that the fixed income market is much bigger than, you know, a modest rally that we've had from the October lows. It's been pretty good. We've had a good bounce. But I think that when you start looking at the dividend yield of the S&P 500, which anybody who's been in the market for a long time knows that 50% of your return comes from dividends. So when you have a dividend yield sitting at 1.6% and sitting at a lower than a 10-year average, and you have fixed income approaching 5%, something's going to give. And it's my opinion that I think that we need to go back down and at least retest the October lows, which would be about another 20% correction.
And do you have a timeline in mind where we're going to see that test?
Timing is always tough. My bet is that it'll come in the spring and the summer. But I will tell you that, you know, interest rates, especially the long end of the curve, meaning like 10 and 20 year type bonds, I personally look at the TLTs. But I think you can see where the TLTs are starting to try to break the October lows. If interest rates were to take another leg up, it's going to be very painful for the stock market in general.
And by another leg up, is that more than the Fed doing 25 basis point hikes in its next two meetings? Does it need to be more than that?
You know, it's really funny. You know, when at the very beginning of this inflation move, the Fed said it was transitory and they didn't believe it. And the two-year T-bill note just kept believing it. And the two-year T-bill has been much more correct than the Federal Reserve. And frankly, I would like to probably monitor the two-year T-bill rate as an indication of what to be doing rather than following the Fed, who's been, frankly, wrong and on the wrong side of this from the beginning.
In terms of the commentary that you issued on Monday, you were talking about that difference between, I think when most people look at an inverted yield curve, they're looking at treasuries and only looking at the two-year versus the 10-year. But you were talking about a different kind of an inversion where you can get more on a treasury bond than you can on a high-quality corporate bond. And so explain why that talks about how risk is all messed up right now.
Basically, what you're talking about is a very, very tight credit spread. So the yield that you're getting from the U.S. government actually was going to be higher than you would be getting in a corporate rate. And the reason that corporate rates should always be higher than a government rate, especially a G7 country like the United States, is because there is frankly no default risk in a U.S. Treasury. They can tax the U.S. citizens. and always make sure that they're going to make their payments. Yet a corporate bond, you know, is attached to a corporation. Corporations definitely can go bankrupt. They certainly can't tax their citizens. And there is a much greater opportunity for something like that to default. So whenever an inversion like that occurs, it's almost, it's showing you that the risk in the market is it's very tight, meaning there's very, very little amount of risk that the market perceives in the marketplace. When credit spreads are really wide and corporations are having to pay 300-400 basis points over government, that's when its credit spreads have been really, really wide. And that's what happened in like 2008 or 2020. And those type of credit spread blowouts are really what you need to see toward the low of a move in the market. So to see them at parity or even worse shows you that people are not concerned. The credit spreads are very tight, and with that comes complacency.
That, as a signal, suggests that we've got a lot more pain to endure, as opposed to this rally is not a bear market rally, but the start of a bull market and a new bull market. Again, I know that triggers and that are hard to envision and predict, but you're calling for the market to take 20% off potentially as early as late spring. So this rally won't last for too much longer. How long does it typically take for an interest rate cycle like that one to work itself out? Because the bottom that is talking about is different than the 20% on the stock market bottom that you were talking about a couple minutes ago.
True. I think you could go back to 2000 to 2003 as a playbook. I think that's a pretty darn good playbook. The bear market took 3 years for the excesses to get washed out from the previous bull market. And that's very, very similar to what I'm looking for now. I'm not looking for an 87 type crash. I'm just looking for a very volatile 2 or 3 years up and down and a lot down to move through the markets to get the excesses to the point where, you know, for instance, if the dividend yield were to move to say 2.25% to 2.5%, I actually think that would be a very attractive rate. And that would be something that I think could definitely compete against, say, a 4.5% to 5% 2-year T-bill. My problem is that when you do the calculations on a 2.25% or 2.5% dividend yield on the S&P 500, you get 2,500 to 2,800 on the S&P. So that's 35-40% lower. And that is why I don't think we're starting a bull market, because usually you start bull markets when everything's very cheap. The dividend yield would suggest that's not really the case right now.
So let's bring this back to what you can invest in. What, if anything, are you buying, and are you willing to ride this rally for as long as it lasts, or are you out of this rally because you think it's basically not real?
Actually, for the last 2 weeks, we have been moving toward the very bearish camp, already moving our portfolios toward that direction. So the answer is, I think that this rally has probably produced more of a rally than I even thought it was going to, you know, over the last few weeks. So we're probably very extended. We're due for a very, very big rest. To weather, this takes us to 3,500. We may need a couple of attempts to go down, you know, to, you know, 3,800 and then down, and inevitably, finally, maybe through the summer, get to those lower levels that really gets us to a point where some true value creation has occurred.
That is, ironically, the best news I've heard, because as dour as the forecast is, it's that when it happens, this is still going to be fairly short, that we're going to get through this relatively quickly. So I guess the R word we have to worry about is not so much recession as it is recovery. If we can do that and have that decline be relatively quick, is it like, you know, ripping the Band-Aid off and okay, we're ready to go when we turn around? Or is it, we're going to see this decline and then we're just going to settle in for a long, cold flat, sideways ugliness for a while.
You know, it's always hard to know what the rebound's going to look like, but I can tell you that, you know, it's interesting that we talk about recession. I actually am not certain we're going to have a recession or not. It's very hard to determine. Some of the numbers that have come out recently have been very strong, which frankly is why the stock market's so vulnerable. See, when you have a overvalued stock market that needs to come down, let's say 1987, everybody remembers the crash of 87, but there was no recession or depression or anything like that after that event. We actually, it took a savings and loan crisis and a war to pull us into a recession. So while I do think the stock market deserves a much lower number, I don't necessarily know if that equates to a recession or not.
Well, I've been saying for a while that a recession is not required for us to have a bear market, and neither is a bear market required for us to have a recession. So we could have one, the other, or both. I find it interesting that you think we may get by with little to no recession. Do you worry at all that if we get to a no landing scenario, that that's just going to make it harder for the recovery that you foresee to happen, that bounce back will not happen if we are just prolonging economic pain and putting it off longer and longer and longer?
The stock market loves liquidity, and the market is drives up and has multiple expansion during those type of periods when the government is lowering interest rates or if they're printing a lot of money. You know, you have a situation here right now where, you know, the market is just pretty rich relative to where fixed income has zoomed up to. And that's really the problem is that you have rates. You know, on my website, lmtr.com, just today I did a really good post, and it basically showed the S&P 500 forward earnings yield minus the 10-year. And basically what it showed was a market valuation that was even more expensive than it was coming into 2008. So, like I said, I don't know if we're going to have a recession or not. It's very difficult. But I can tell you that the market multiples are too high relative to where fixed income has moved to. And the adjustment, to me, looks like somewhere around 3,000 is what where fair value for me in the S&P 500 would be.
Brad, I talk with smart, savvy people managing tons of money every day. Your comments here are not the mainstream from what we've been hearing. Certainly when it comes to the importance of that difference in the fixed income side, et cetera. So I got to ask, why is what I'm hearing from you different than what I'm hearing from other guys? Because I know you're smart, but they are too.
Look, I think that there was a period in time in 2014, 15, and 16 where the markets had moved up after the 08 crisis. And they were consolidating. There was a lot of opportunity for them just to kind of go sideways. And instead, the governments around the world took interest rates basically to zero. Remember that when we had like $20 trillion worth of debt around the world that was trading at negative interest rates?
Yep.
So when you had that situation occur, everyone left fixed income and went in, they started buying dividend stocks. Remember that? We're all going to buy dividend stocks. And they ran the S&P 500 and the large cap market up quite a bit getting into these dividends. We still haven't moved the dividend yield back to where it belongs from 2016 and 15, but yet fixed income has doubled, triple, quadruple in the rate. So 5 or 7 years ago, 6 years ago, everybody was getting out of fixed income and moving into large cap dividends for that specific reason, to get income. Now there's a new 800-pound gorilla in the room, and it's the fixed income market, and it's back. And it's going to continue to drain market. It's just like the old Marty Zweig in the book, Don't Fight the Fed. Anybody who has not read that book that is in the market should. And that's what's going on here. The cost of capital is going up. the amount of margin that it takes to keep that margin debt is continuing to go up. And eventually it's going to create two things. It's either going to move down there gradually, like what I'm hoping, or the market's going to stay very, very high and we're going to have some kind of very unpleasant quarter where it looks a little more like 87. And I frankly would prefer to see it gradually just kind of, you know, let the steam out of the market, let, you know, one leg down. We had a bounce from October to now, let another leg down into the spring and slowly stair step this thing down instead of creating a unpleasant monthly hit that's, you know, 20 or 30% in a month, which is the volatility tends to catch people off guard. There's margin calls. There's a lot of stuff that ends up occurring that a slower bear market may prevent just because it's moving a little slower and not so fast.
Brad, really interesting. We're going to follow up with you down the line. Meanwhile, thank you so much for coming on the show. I should explain to my audience, you're joining us actually from vacation because you knew that we had some other issues. So thanks for stepping into the void. Lots to follow up with. We'll do that again. Safe travels, my friend.
No problem at all. Thanks a lot for having me.
That's Brad Lammensdorf, the strategist behind the Lammensdorf Market Timing Report, and also the manager of the Ranger Equity Bear ETF and the chief executive officer at Active Alts. LMTR.com, the website for the Market Timing Report, which gets you what he was talking about. Brad's on Twitter at LMTRBrad. Up next, the big interview, talking gold. George Milling Stanley from State Street Global will be here in a moment.